That's not good enough. This guy is the top scientist in the number three tobacco company in America. He's a corporate officer. You never get whistleblowers from Fortune 500 companies. This guy is the ultimate insider. He's got something to say. He wants to say it. I want it on 60 Minutes.
Doesn't matter what he wants.
Am I missing something?
What do you mean, Mike?
I mean, he's got a corporate secrecy agreement. Give me a break. I mean, this is a public health issue, like an unsafe airframe on a passenger jet or some company dumping cyanide into the East River. Issues like that. He can talk, we can air it. They've got no right to hide behind a corporate agreement.
And I don't like to be pushed around.
I'm not pushing you around. I'm asking you questions.
I'm just a commodity to you, aren't I? I could be anything, right? Anything worth putting on between commercials.
To a network, probably we're all commodities. To me, you're not a commodity. What you are is important. You go public and 30 million people hear what you gotta say, nothing, I mean nothing, will ever be the same again. You believe that?
No.
You should. Because when you're done, a judgment is gonna go down in a court of public opinion, my friend. And that's the power you have.
You believe that?
I believe that. Yes, I believe.
You believe that because you get information out to people, something happens?
Yes.
Maybe that's just what you've been telling yourself all these years to justify having a good job, having status. And maybe for the audience, it's just voyeurism, something to do on a Sunday night. And maybe it won't change a fucking thing. And people like myself and my family are left hung out to dry, used up, broke, alone.
Are you talking to me, or did somebody else just walk in here? I never assume any of that.
Understand.
No,
exactly.
Don't evade a choice you gotta make by questioning my reputation or 60 Minutes with this cheap skepticism.
I have to put my family's welfare on the line here, my friend. And what are you putting up? You're putting up words.
Words. While you've been dicking around some fucking company golf tournaments, I've been out in the world giving my word and backing it up with action. Now, are you going to go and do this thing or not?
Well, we've done it. We're at the 100th Meridian, folks. It's just a big black line of longitude. Just got to step right on over it. It's all you got to do. I'll be here to help you. It's the 100th Meridian, baby. Whatever it is you. That's right, 100th Meridian. 100th Meridian. Here it is.
Bobby, I asked him for photos and profiles and bios, and all I know is his work. That's what I know about Bobby.
10 million downloads. That's all the talking for me. I don't do social media. I don't sell myself. I don't get out there and try and, you know, make money off of this. This isn't a money-making thing. This is very serious what happened here, and the salaciousness of it is staggering. This is very, and it affects all of us. Honestly, it really does. Every last one of us in this room, guaranteed. If you're from America, you're from Canada, you got screwed by these people. Guaranteed.
All I want to say about Bobby is what I said this morning, which is one thing all of our speakers have in common is incredible integrity and work ethic. And the production of this podcast is unbelievable. The content, and he follows the story wherever it goes, no matter how inconvenient it gets at times. So without further ado, I'd like to hand it over to Mr. Bob.
Thanks, Tim.
Great to have you.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for coming out tonight, today, morning, whatever. First, let's start with some background. Since I'm kind of an enigma, like on the internet, for instance, I don't have profiles. I don't do social media, like I was just saying. I'm more get to the point. And I create so much content that I don't have time to do it. I create 6 new episodes a day, every single day, 7 days a week. We keep it rolling. There's no time to stop. We keep going. And this story has been a story that's been evolving now for decades. And we finally got to a point where somebody was held responsible. But the problem is, there's a lot of other people who should be held responsible as well. And so when you look at this story overall, and you look at the situation that ballooned from it, you have yourself a situation where people that were in positions of very, very much extreme power stood by and watched as this all took place. And not only watched, but in some instances, these people, they enabled it. So we're going to talk about the whole situation. I was really just going to focus on the financials because Nick Ryan was supposed to be here as well, talking about some other stuff before me, so we didn't want to overlap. But since he's not here, I'm just going to wing it, and we're just going to talk about the story in general. So first of all, a little background about him. I'm not somebody who went to fancy lad school, as you could possibly and probably imagine. I went to UNLV. I graduated from UNLV with a degree in political science with a focus on Near East policy. So of course, I'm talking about something completely different like everybody else with a degree. But for me, the situation started when my grandfather was arrested. So my last name is Kikuchi. And as you can imagine, when your last name is Kikuchi and you get arrested, probably has to do with organized crime, right? You would think something like that. Well, that's not the case. My grandfather got arrested for illegal gambling. And they gave him 7 years in prison at 70 years old. Never been arrested before. No kind of record, nothing. And it was the FBI who did. So when my grandfather got arrested, I said to myself, how is it possible that this man who has never done anything wrong in his life is going to prison now for 7 years at this late stage of his life? How does that happen when all this other stuff I see around me on a regular basis is way worse than what he did? Well, that led me into looking into the Jeffrey Epstein case at first, because I saw that there was a situation arising where we had this man who had been arrested previously already had a charge on his record for solicitation of a minor, which, by the way, how's that even the law? What does it mean when you're picking up a girl, a young girl who's under the age? You're a child molester, right? You're someone who is picking up underage girls and you're trying to molest them. So the fact that there was even a law on the books calling it solicitation of a minor when it should have just been child abuse from the beginning is all you need to know about the blueprint that they had in place. So Jeffrey Epstein gets this deal, right? This sweetheart deal, where he ends up only serving 13 months in jail. But during those 13 months in jail, he was able to leave that jail every single day. He was in his office for 15 hours a day. And while he was in his office, he was still molesting women. The Palm Beach parole office was supposed to be following him. They weren't. When they were requested the records from the Palm Beach office, oh, we destroyed those records. Those records are no longer available. So this man gets this sweetheart deal. And not only that, but have you ever heard of a deal for anyone in the history of the world where your co-conspirators who are unnamed are also protected? Did anyone ever tell me about a deal like that? Has anyone ever heard something like that before? So if John Gotti, for instance, gets arrested, right? And you have Sammy the Bull and Romano cuts a deal. So Sammy the Bull says, I want my three unnamed associates to be part of this deal. What do you think the federal government would say to that? No way. There's zero chance that's happening. You're lucky we're giving you a deal. Never mind your friends. So they cut this deal with Jeffrey Epstein. I say to myself, how is that even possible? How is it possible that this man gets this deal and I have family members that are languishing away in a federal prison? So it led me down the road to start looking into the story overall. And what I found was some of the most disturbing, incredible stuff that you could ever possibly imagine. And it all started at the very top. So this man started his career, if you will, at Barron's Stearns, so Wall Street. And you're going to find out throughout this talk that the financial sector, that's the enemy in this story. The financial sector, they truly do not have your well-being at heart. I know, everybody knows that. But when you look at this group of people that were facilitating him at J.P. Morgan, led by Jess Staley, with Jamie Dimon knowing, by the way, you look at this whole entire group of people, and not one of them have faced penalties for this. They're all still in their positions. They all still have the same gigantic golden parachutes they always had, and not one of them has went to jail. Not one single person has went to jail besides Blaine Maxwell. But the problem with that is that the financial sector is the one that made sure that this all moved. They were the straw that stirred the drink, if you will. And when you look at the people who were involved, and you look at the places that they still have, say, with the Biden administration, for instance, Bill Richardson. Everybody familiar with Bill Richardson here? Used to be the governor of New Mexico, worked for Bill Clinton for a long time, very, very locked in when it comes to the Democratic apparatus. Well, Bill Richardson was credibly accused of raping Virginia Roberts. Do you think that stopped? Joe Biden from bringing Bill Richardson on board to go and negotiate for Brittany Griner? Nah, no big deal. Credible accusations now. Not only him, how about George Mitchell? Anyone familiar with George Mitchell? Senator, was the lead senator, head senator for the Senate, from Maine. Another guy, credibly accused. Bill Clinton, not credibly accused, but what was Jeffrey Epstein doing at his White House 17 times? No answers for that either. And when you continue to look at this and you continue to see how it all unfolded, there is no doubt that the fix was it. And when you look at Jeffrey Epstein's decades-long career, well, every single time he got caught for something, every time there was a situation where there would be an arrest and he was involved, everybody else would go to jail but him. Every last person would go to jail but him. And he was left to continue to do what he was doing, running this group, this, what I like to call an organized crime ring, because that's basically what it was. The easiest way to explain it to people is you had Epstein at the top, Maxwell was the underboss, and then if you're familiar with how organized crime works, you have capital regimes underneath them, which are the lieutenants. They give out all the orders. So Jeffrey Epstein had himself, Elaine Maxwell, and then he had his four. Those were the four women who were enabling this whole entire decades-long run of abuse. You had Adriana Ross, you had Leslie Groff, you had Nadia Morsenkova, and you also had Sarah Kellen Vickers, excuse me. So Sarah Kellen Vickers and these women were the ones who would go out and they'd bring these girls in for Jeffrey Epstein to abuse. So these are all the women, the unnamed associates that I talked about before. They're the ones who were protected by this deal. And that's basically the reason that I really got interested in what was going on. So then from there, it led to digging deeper. And then you start digging a little bit deeper and you start hearing the stories of the women who were actually abused by this thing. And for me, there's a lot of salaciousness, right? There's a lot of people who want to make it about something that it's not. People who try to use it as a political cudgel. You'll see one group of people say, oh, well, look, Donald Trump said that he was friends with Jeffrey Epstein and, you know, they were best buddies. That is not factual. That is not the case. If you listen to Bradley Edwards, who was the lawyer for Virginia Roberts, the main woman, basically, who wrote this story, Donald Trump was the only one who cooperated with his inquiry when he was having that inquiry. So they'll try to use it as a puzzle politically, but it fails the sniff test. Now, does that mean that the Republicans don't have their own disgusting people in their party or their group? Of course not, they do. But this story is mainly about how those kinds of people, the Democrats, were really in bed with Jeffrey Epstein. A lot of people don't want to admit that these days. People want to gloss that over. They don't want to bring it up. And you see it with the legacy media all the time. Now, what do you think is more egregious? Somebody says, you know, he's a great guy, I used to hang out with him. Or if that same guy, Jeffrey Epstein, is at the White House 17 times. Isn't that something that's pretty egregious, you would think? Like, there would be questions from the legacy media about that. Why would Epstein have your White House 17 times? Can you give me an answer? No. Bill Clinton gave one statement in 2020 and has not updated it since. Never once. And that statement was, oh, I was on the plane five times. That's a lie. I was never at the ranch. That's a lie. I was never down in Virgin Islands. That's a lie. And yet, nobody has called him out, not once yet. Why is it? Why is the legacy media continuing to protect this man? What is the reasoning behind that? Why would they do that? And that was another thing that really got my juices flowing about what was going on here. Why is there this coordinated, operation almost, it looked like, to make sure that this man doesn't go to prison? What's at stake here? So you start going a little bit deeper, and you start looking at all of the people that have been at this man's house. All of these people from the current CIA director, Mr. Burns, who, by the way, says he had no idea who Jeffrey Epstein was. This man is the head of the CIA, and he wants you to believe he had no idea who Jeffrey Epstein was. Okay, I mean, if you want to believe that, then that's fine. But me, personally, if you're going to be the head of the CIA, you probably should know who Jeffrey Epstein is, considering he was already under investigation, he was already arrested. But no, I have no idea. And I like to call that the Epstein amnesia. And they all suffer from it. Every last one of these people that have been caught up with him in the aftermath of this suffer from this amnesia. And anytime they're called out, that people say, well, we didn't know. How are we supposed to know what this man was doing? How are we responsible for that? You can't blame me for having friends. Well, then my response to that always is, I don't even have one friend who is molesting people. How is it that you have 7 or 8? How do you have 4 or 5 people around you that are all under the same charges if you're not fellow travelers? The real answer is, they all knew and they just didn't care. Because when they look at us, they look at people like you and I, our children. We're pieces on a board to be moved around. We're not even human beings to them. And these girls that they were bringing in were from the other side of the tracks, if you will. They were from broken homes. They were from families that were filled with all kinds of issues, drug addicted parents, people who weren't there. And they had a whole questionnaire that they would ask these girls when they would go pick them up at high schools, when they would go pick them up at malls. And when Glenn Maxwell would go pick them up, her saying would be, we're going to go get some new bottles. That's what she would say when they would go pick up girls already. So they would go pick up these little girls and they would ask them all these questions. You know, are you close to your parents? What's your, you know, where do you live? Blah, blah, blah. And they had a specific kind of girl that they went after. And those specific kind of girl obviously were the ones who were poor, who needed $200, because that's what he gave them when he molested them. He would molest these girls. And then he'd give them $200 and say, oh, well, this is for the massage. And that would act as his protection later on down the road if he got busted. Well, it was a business transaction. She's a prostitute. Remember when I said kids can't be prostitutes, though? In Florida, there was a law on the books where it was solicitation of minors. So it wasn't child molestation. It wasn't anything close to that. So now Florida has changed that law. That law is no longer on the books in Florida, and if you solicit a young girl who is under the age, you're going to get arrested for serious charges, like he should have been. But his situation and what happened with him down in Florida, it led to this whole entire mushroom that we see here, because now, after he got arrested the second time, people had questions about that situation in Florida and the NDA. So that NDA that protected him and what happened in Florida really was the impetus to really get other people interested in what he was doing. And then we saw what happened with Julie Brown's article. So in 2019, when Jeffrey Epstein got arrested the second time, Julie Brown had an article that came out in the Miami Herald. And this article was what led to this whole hubbub that we're talking about right now. The thing is, though, she wrote this article for one specific purpose. And that specific purpose was she was looking to blame Alex Acosta for this. She wanted to know what Alex Acosta's role was in all of this while he was working as a attorney for the state of Florida, for the federal government. So he got the job with Trump as the labor secretary. And they looked at it as, oh, well, this is an interim. So they thought that they were going to have a slam dunk. They thought that they were going to be able to just out a whole bunch of people and score a bunch of political points. But it didn't turn into that. And then once it blew up in their face and all of their faves, as Nancy Pelosi's own daughter said, Nancy Pelosi's daughter said, when this all first broke, she said, well, we have to realize that some of our faves are going to be caught up in this. And when she's talking about her faves, obviously, she's talking about the Bill Clintons of the world. She's talking about those sorts of people. But there was no accountability. The second that it blew up on them, the second that it became something that they didn't want it to be, they forgot about the story. And that has been one of the biggest issues with this story. The legacy media doesn't want to talk about it because they do not want to lose access to their friends. They don't want to lose access to Prince Andrew. That's why the story was squashed in 2015. They were scared at ABC that they would no longer have access to the royals. So what they did was get rid of a whole interview they had with Virginia. And how do we know they did that? Well, Amy Robach was caught on a hot mic saying, I had this whole story complaining after it broke, because she had the story previously. But the heads of ABC, the heads of Disney, thought it would be a better idea to watch a story about a serial molester so that they could have access to the royals. So that showed you kind of where the legacy media has been at throughout this whole thing. And still to this day, they don't get the idea of what this story is. They don't understand the true essence. For them, it's about salaciousness. For them, it's about trying to find, you know, these little holes where they can say, oh, look, gotcha. What they forgot about is these are real girls, real women who were abused. And a lot of these women who were abused have become my friend. I've built relationships with a lot of these women. And I'll tell you what, they feel like they have been abandoned. Where were the Me Too people? during Glenn Maxwell's trial. There was no big rally out there for these women who were abused. And we're not talking about allegations. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars in lawsuits paid out without even a question. So the allegation stuff, that's out the window, right? You want to talk about allegations with Prince Andrew? Fine. He's never been convicted in a court. Fine. When you're talking about Jeffrey Epstein, however, and Glenn Maxwell, there's no allegations. They are what they are. He's a pedophile. She's a human trafficker. And the legacy media still seems to forget that. They like to gloss the story over and not tell the whole story. They don't dig into the financials. They don't tell you about how this story has been there, right in their laps. And they refuse to tell you decades ago. And again, it comes back to the access. Because when you look at legacy media, right, how do they get their stories? They have sources, right? They have people working for the CIA or whatever that they've built relationships with, and then they quote them anonymously. Well, they have this relationship, and they don't want to lose that. So they're not going to talk about their buddy who's their source or somebody who they're getting access from because they want to sell papers. They don't care if it brings justice. That's not what the legacy media is in this for. They're in it to sell papers. If it bleeds, it leads. Every day there's some new travesty or new disaster that we should be worried about. This, that, the other thing. But the reality is, that's just because they're trying to get the clicks. They're trying to have you come to their website. They're trying to have you tune in for that day. These are the stories that they should be talking about. This is the kind of thing that they should be doing exposés on. CNN, no stories. MSNBC, no stories. None of the legacy media, besides Tucker Carlson, has ever really even touched on this thing. And when I was on the Tucker Carlson show, it was an eye-opening experience for me, considering that there was so many instances of him telling me and people working with him telling him that people just didn't want to talk about the story. People were scared it would cause them, you know, to lose their career or to face backlash or something like that. And when you're dealing with powerful people, like the previous speaker was talking about, that's what happens. And while I might not agree with the previous speaker and the things he was saying, he has every right to say what he said. Anybody who says he doesn't have that right is not somebody that should be trusted to govern any of this. So there are a lot of gatekeepers in the media, and the gatekeepers in the media, their job is to not tell you the truth. Unfortunately, that's a job that we have to do for ourselves. And you see that now because of the way guerrilla media has sprung up. You have all of these outlets out here now that are doing more traffic than even the legacy media. And that's because they're not telling you lies. They're giving it to you the truth. They're giving it to you unadulterated. And people can do with it what they please. But when it comes to breaking this story, they had everything they needed to do that. And they just chose not to do it. And so that opened up a whole entire space for the survivors themselves to do it. They did the work for the media. They took a legacy. They took to social media. They took to a media campaign to demand justice. And if they didn't do that, if these women weren't already being abused for all these years, and we're not talking about, you know, an instance where it was happened one time. We're talking about this was ongoing, consistent grooming and abuse. Nadia Marcinkova was sold to this man at 15 years old. So she was groomed from 15 years old to do what he wanted her to do. So when you look at the situation, there's a lot of nuance, right? It's not just, oh, well, she's guilty too. Should she be punished? She should be, probably. That's not for me to decide. But what I will say, though, it's very nuanced. And when you have a story that's as nuanced as this, you have to have long-form educational sit-downs. You have to have long-form discussions. And the legacy media is not built for that. And their story, when it comes to this, is always just been nothing more than surface level. Whereas you have these survivors coming out begging somebody to platform them, begging for somebody to listen to what they had to say. And then that's where people like I came in. And I was talking about the financials of this story before I got contacted by Maria Farmer, who was one of the survivors. And she blew the whistle on Jeffrey Epstein in 1994. And nobody did anything. And instead of them doing anything, you know what happened? Her little sister Annie got molested by him too. And that's because they didn't do anything. And I don't know how much more plainly I can put it. The FBI has time to go and kick in the door of a 71-year-old man because he likes to put some bets on sports, but they can't arrest a guy like Jeffrey Epstein or Ghislaine Maxwell. And we're not talking about just mere allegations from hearsay. If you go through the court documents, as I have on my podcast, every single court document that has just dropped, over 2,000 of them, you see these names pop up throughout the court documents, named by judges, named by prosecutors, but yet none of them have went to prison. None of them have been indicted. None of them have even been deposed. Can you show me any other situation where that's ever occurred? Look at Nexium. Are you guys familiar with Nexium? The situation that happened with, you had Keith Raniere up there in Northern New York. It was a kind of a cult situation as well. You had a bunch of people, and he was human trafficking, basically. He had a group of girls that were his special girls. He ran them, and they get other girls to come in. He gets charged with RICO. And RICO is the most powerful tool that the American government has to go after organized crime. It was created to go after the mafia, and now they use it just about all the time on everyone. You know they never used it on? Come on, you guys know. Jeffrey Epstein. You know who else they didn't use it on? Ghislaine Maxwell. You know they didn't use it on? R. Kelly. You know who else? Young Thug. Not Jeffrey Epstein, though, God forbid. So you look at the two-tier justice system, and then you wonder why people are up in arms, why nobody trusts the institutions, the foundations that the country was built upon. You know, when I was growing up, you could pretty much be assured that if there was a crime committed, if someone assaulted somebody, they're going to jail. That's not the case anymore. So people don't have any trust in the system as it is. And then you have something like this that adds on top of it, and people who didn't have trust already, now it's just completely shattered. And then, I don't want to go too far off course here, but you look at what's going on with politicizing the different agencies to go after political opponents, and that just adds another layer to this maelstrom that we see. With Jeffrey Epstein, however, this man should have been hit with RICO. They didn't do it because it would have caught all of them up in it as well. So under RICO, if you get $1 from somebody who's already being charged by RICO, you are now part of that conspiracy. They can freeze all of your funds. They can go into your bank account, take every dollar. They can call you a criminal. They can bring you in. They can depose you. They can wire your phone without you knowing. All at the sign of a judge. Quick little signature. They didn't do that at all. So if they would have done that, think about all of the people that were involved with this man throughout the years who received money from him. They would have had to be part of that RICO investigation. That's why they didn't use RICO on him, and that's why they hit him with those soft charges. Because if they would have hit him with RICO, they would have been forced to go after everybody else, and it would have been impossible for them to do that. You know why? Because all the people they were going after, they're the people who pay the bills, folks, the financial sector. They're the people who pay the bills. JP Morgan, Deutsche Bank. These are these gigantic mega banks out there who are and were in bed with people like Epstein. And then when they're caught being in bed and in court, told in the court papers, you guys were part of this human trafficking operation to the tune of $190 million fine. So if they're getting fined for $190 million, wouldn't that lead you to believe that they did something pretty bad? Something that somebody should probably go to jail for? Nobody went to jail, ever, when it comes to the financial sector in this story. And again, it brings us back to Ghislaine Maxwell being the only one to go to jail. Much deserved, no doubt about it. She's where she belongs. But all these other people should have been there as well. And it was a dereliction of duty by the Department of Justice. It was a dereliction of duty by everybody involved. And it continues to be so. Because this information is not like I have some secret tomb and I'm the only one who has access to it. All you have to do is look into those court documents. It's right there for anyone to see. And you have these legacy media outlets with millions and millions of dollars and all these different staffers and investigators. And it is unbelievably disgusting that they haven't come back with a real story yet. And they've left it to other people to do. And then when other people do break the story, they'll piggyback on top of it. No doubt about it. They got to get their clicks, right? And that's why I turn down the interviews every time they try and get me to come on their shows. Recently, when the documents dropped, Leland Bitter from News Nation contacted me to come on his show. No thanks. You had Dershowitz on your show. I have no desire to come on a show that has Alan Dershowitz on it. Zero desire for that to happen. Same with CNN. I have no desire to come on your program either. Why should I let them piggyback off of what I've been doing when they're the ones with the resources, they're the ones with all the money in the world to go out and break these stories? Go do it yourself. But the legacy media refuses to do it until something happens. They won't put the resources into the story that this story deserves. And that's because, again, it's going to catch every one of their buddies up in, and they just can't have it. It would literally destroy the whole entire structure of what we have going on. When you look at all of these people that have been involved from the top down, from, for instance, whenever you have a president get elected, what happens as far as his cabinet? How many people come in from the financial sector? You have troves of people. Every single president that gets elected, just look at the people in the financial sector that make the move. These are the very same people who were protecting Jeffrey Epstein, who were assisting Jeffrey Epstein and enabling him. Now they're in positions of power, and we expect them to do something about what happened. It's not going to happen. So they can have all of these Senate hearings on all these stupid things, on frogs in the river and nonsense. We haven't had one Senate hearing about Jeffrey Epstein. We haven't had nobody called to the carpet, no subpoenas issued, no conferences, nobody stepping up to the plate, nobody caring. Question is, why? What are they so scared of? What are they, who are they protecting? And that really has been at the core of what the survivors have been trying to get out, the message they've been trying to get out, that they were abandoned, not only by the government, but by the legacy media, the fourth estate, whose job it is to hold people in power to account. I shouldn't have to be telling this story. I have better things to do. But here I am 4 years later, speaking to you folks in Montana in the middle of a damn blizzard. And it's maddening to me. It really is maddening to me. Because you get to know these women, and they're such great people, like everybody else. You know, everybody has their unique story, right? These women, they have shouldered something for decades. We're talking about serious trauma. And nobody believed them at first. They were called drug addicts. They were called prostitutes. You name it. During the initial arrest of Jeffrey Epstein, there were over 33 girls under the age of 16 who came forward. You know how many of those girls spoke to the grand jury? One. And you know what happened to that one girl who spoke in front of the grand jury? She was destroyed by the prosecution. They destroyed their own wounds because she had a MySpace profile at the time. And on that MySpace profile, this young girl, 15 years old, how dare she talk about how she liked to have some drinks with her friends and how she liked to, you know, kiss boys. So they used that against her in court. Not Dershowitz, not Ken Starr, no. But Barry Fisher, the prosecutor from Florida, the state prosecutor, he destroyed his own witness. And instead of bringing the other 32 girls in, they went with just that one witness, that one story. That way they could give him the deal that they wanted to give him. But it wasn't Apostle who gave him that deal. Keep that in mind. I want to slam that point home because that's a driving point in this story where people try and say that it was Apostle who did it. Now, Apostle, powerful man, of course. If you're an ASUA, you're a district attorney for the federal government, you have some power. Do you have enough power to give a deal out like that, where you can, it's a deal that has never been given out in the history of America before. Every legal scholar you talk to will tell you the same thing. He's got, this is impossible to get a deal like that. Unnamed co-conspirators being protected. This man gets that deal. And you have to ask yourself, how is it that he could get that deal? And nobody else gets it. And it just brings you right back to the, it's a circle. It really comes back to the corruption of the financial sector and everybody that they've been harboring and enabling throughout this whole entire thing. So what do we do about it? Unfortunately, there's not much that we can do about it. We're in a position now where the Department of Justice says it's an ongoing investigation. But the reason they say that is because they don't want to give out any information about it. So if they say it's an ongoing investigation and we hit them with the Freedom of Information Act, they don't have to give it up. This is an ongoing investigation. So they continue to say it's an ongoing investigation, but there's been no movement. There's nothing going on behind the scenes. None of the survivors have been notified that there is another investigation, and they have to be because of their CBRA rights. So they say that that's happening. They say that they're going to fix things. They say that they're going to hold people to account. Nobody's held to account, and nothing is fixed. We had the Epstein OIG report that came out recently, And that had to do with his death in jail. And I'm sure everybody heard about that. You know, Epstein didn't kill himself, the whole thing. And I'll be the first one to tell you, I don't know what happened in that jail scene. I don't know. I wasn't there. I didn't see video. I have no clue. You know, did see video, they say? Bill Barr. Now, I don't know about you, but Bill Barr isn't exactly what I would call a trustworthy individual, somebody that, you know, the keeper of the truth, the guy that's going to be the arbiter of what's real or not. I can think of some better people than Bill Barr. He's the only one that allegedly has seen these tapes that prove that Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. Nobody else. How come these tapes aren't made public? Why can't we see these tapes? Is it national security? Are we talking about nuclear bombs here? Are we talking about, no, we're talking about a man who's dead in jail. Federal, by the way, so that's all of our tax dollars. Why aren't we getting to see that video? You don't have to show us the traumatic part of him dying, but let's see the run up to it. Let's see everything. Be transparent. They have not done so. So they put out this OIG report talking about all these issues in the jail, all this, that, the other thing. And they gloss over one of the main facts. One of the main facts of that situation is that Jeffrey Epstein was put in a jail cell with a man facing 4 homicides. Now, why would you put a man who was being protected, Jeffrey Epstein, one of the most fragile inmates we have in the system at the time, why would you put him in the jail cell with a man who is being tried for 4 murders? My opinion is he was put in that jail cell so that man, Nicholas Tartaglione, could pass a message on to Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein, you're going to kill yourself or we're going to do it for you. The first attempted suicide of Jeffrey Epstein's, he told people in the direct aftermath of that, including the cops, that he was assaulted by Nicholas Tartaglione, his cellmate. The cops, the DOJ, they did a very brief investigation into what happened. The problem is, well, wouldn't you know, the video wasn't working. No video that night. All the video's gone from that jail cell. So they believe Nicholas Tartaglione. They said, well, he didn't do it. Obviously, he said he didn't do it, so I guess we have to believe him. We all know what happened in that jail cell. Jeffrey Epstein didn't try to kill himself with Tartaglione in there. He was assaulted by Tartaglione, and the message was, we can get to you. Who gave him that message? I have no idea. I will be the first to tell you, I do not know. And anyone telling you different is lying. We don't know. It could be many, many different people had interest in making sure that Jeffrey Epstein kept his mouth shut. The problem with all of that is, this man, who we're listening to, Bill Barr, has refused to give us this evidence. The government refuses to give us this evidence. And they want us to just believe what Bill Barr has to say. Unfortunately for them, nobody is believing what Bill Barr has to say. Nobody believes what the OIG report has to say. They talked about how it was a maelstrom of screw-ups that led to this. Well, yeah, but what has been fixed in the aftermath? Nothing. The warden who was in charge at the time, you think he'd get fired, right? Nah, they just moved him to a different facility. A facility where, you know, he'd make more money. He gets moved to a new facility. The 2 guards who were asleep at the time, nothing happened to them either. No, they got charged, right? Charges got dropped. So at the end of the day, how is it that there is no accountability? How is it that the DOJ can go on and on about this report, can go on and on about their OIG nonsense, and then have the audacity to tell us, well, you just have to believe us? Because I don't know about you folks, but I'm done believing what they tell me. I'm a trust but verify kind of guy. So sure, I'll trust you, but I need to verify what you're telling me. So what has led you to believe that he, you know, killed himself? And then you go into the autopsy. Well, at first it was declared, we don't know. We don't know what happened. That's what the original autopsy said, the results. Then you have the medical examiner who comes in and she says, look, this is a suicide. That's it. No questions, no argument, nothing. She overrules the original ruling and marks it as a suicide. Dr. Michael Bodden sat in for this autopsy. And Dr. Michael Bodden was hired by Jeffrey Epstein's brother, Mark Epstein, to sit in for this autopsy so that they had a point man there. According to Dr. Bodden, well, Jeffrey Epstein's hyoid bone was broken. And when your hyoid bone is broken, that's due to somebody killing you, somebody strangling you, not from committing suicide. And he broke it all down into a way where I don't know how anyone could not believe the narrative that he was pitching. So you have these 2 competing narratives running pretty much head to head, and the federal government, they could fix it all. They could end it all right now by just showing you us the proof that they say that they have. but they refused to do it. And that is pretty much where we're at still with this case. It's at a point where no matter how hard people push, no matter how hard people demand for things, nothing gets changed. Recently, you have Marsha Blackburn asking for flight logs. She's going to be running into an absolute brick wall. There is no chance in hell that she is going to get what she's asking. They're going to give her the runaround. They're going to say they care. They're going to say they want to get to the bottom of it. But you notice there hasn't been any movement. Has there been any sort of committee put together? Has there been anybody, you know, ready to go and hold these people to account? No, there hasn't. So what you're going to see is more of a runaround. You're going to see more people in the legacy media continue to report on the story, but only on a surface level. And you're going to continue to see these women demand justice and meet silence at every turn. The question is, when are we going to change that? When are we going to send people to DC, or when are we going to demand that that changes? And as of now, it's starting to turn. People are starting to understand and learn what really went on here and just how bad things really were and how deep it truly went. And people are starting to demand some answers, and you see it. You see all these documentaries popping up now. You see people, you know, getting involved as in, well, okay, you're going to report more on this. I've seen a million comment sections whenever there's a story demanding that these legacy media outlets report more on what's going on. So there's obviously a need and a want for information in this sphere, and the legacy media just doesn't do it. So what I would hope that everybody does, and what I always say is, just, it's like a door opening when you hear about this story. There is so much going on here that nobody could break it down in an hour, 2 hours, 5 hours and give you all of the details. They can just give you an introduction. And then if you want to walk through that door, it's right there for you. Everything is right there for you. And if you're truly interested in the truth is there. And the truth is, we all got screwed. And we continue to get screwed on a daily basis. Every single day that these people are out there running around, living their best lives, being millionaires, being rich, starting all these endless wars, while our children, our family members are the ones that have to fight them. They don't go and fight them. When's the last time a senator went to war? When's the last time a senator's child went to war? They don't care. And we're all just pieces on this game. And they continue to make it that way. They continue to conduct themselves in that manner. And what you see them do on the grand stage, they do here at home too. And all of these people, all of these girls that have come through with their stories, the craziest part about it is for every girl that's told her story, there's 10 or 20 others who haven't come forward, or they don't want to ruin their lives now. They're scared to relive it. They don't want their children to know. They don't want their friends to know. And it's something that they still have. It's so bad for some of these women that they refused to get a settlement. They didn't even want to put their names in for that settlement and get $400,000 or $500,000, $1 million in some cases, because they didn't want to relive the trauma. Some of these women have went through years and years and years of therapy to try and get better. So when every time the story hits and it's told incorrectly, or it's told in a manner that is salacious or as entertainment, it re-injures these women. You know, they see it. They're following the news like everybody else, you know? So they didn't want to come forward. And they still struggle with that because they feel like them not coming forward maybe led to other women getting abused. And it just propagates the sadness and the feelings of inadequacy that they have. And what I hope that happens moving forward is that people listen a little bit more before they talk when it comes to a story like this. This isn't a fire from the hip story. You got to really dig deep here. You got to go deep when it comes to the origins, who was involved, why they were involved, what they were up to. And it all connects. And when you start following those spider webs and you see where it all ends up, there's no doubt that the real villain here is the financial sector. And that was what my original talk today was going to be about, the financial sector down in the U.S. Virgin Islands, what they were up to, and the fact that U.S. Virgin Islands, they enabled this whole thing. They're, and not just a few people, we're talking about the whole entire political class of the U.S. Virgin Islands enabled this whole entire thing. From Cecile DeJong, who was the wife of Albert DeJong, who's the governor of the island, she was also Jeffrey Epstein's sister. She would sit there, work for Epstein, then go home at night to her husband and plead Epstein's case to her husband by getting the sex offender laws changed or making it so that Jeffrey Epstein doesn't have to get a waiver when he leaves the U.S. Virgin Islands. He doesn't have to check in. He doesn't have to register. And this was all facilitated by somebody who was supposed to be a government official of the USBI. And it goes on and on and on down there from people working with the police. Jeffrey Epstein would give them a bunch of money for equipment. He'd give the schools computers. And everybody was making a bunch of money on this guy. So why would they want to stop, you know, the kiddie from coming around? We're all wetting our feet here. We're going to continue to get rich. So the U.S. Virgin Islands thought it would be a good idea, after all was said and done, to sue J.P. Morgan and say it was J.P. Morgan facilitating it. What they didn't expect, though, the survivors now have sued the U.S. Virgin Islands for them facilitating it. So all that money that the U.S. Virgin Islands just got in their lawsuits is now in jeopardy because the survivors are suing the U.S. Virgin Islands for facilitating them being abused. Now think about that. That's a United States territory. That is the United States jurisdiction. So you mean to tell me that the whole territory, basically, everybody that was in power at that time was on board with this? And I'm here to tell you, yes, that's what I'm telling you. They were all on board, all of them. You have people who worked in the airport who said, we all knew what was going on. You've seen the girls getting off the planes. And nobody stopped them. Nobody stepped up. Nobody said, you know what, this isn't right. These girls are obviously 14, 15 years old. Nobody did a thing. And the U.S. Virgin Islands is as complicit as any single person, without a doubt. And they're about to feel that pain. And I hope that pain for them is severe. Because they've run around this whole entire time acting like they've been some champion of justice. They haven't done one thing to move justice forward. They haven't opened up a fund to help survivors. They haven't opened up a facility to help human trafficking victims. What they have done is collect their money and laugh all the way to the bank. That's what they've done this whole entire time, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and that's what they continue to do. They decided to go after Epstein, and Maxwell was a seeker, which is a version of RICO, but of a civil nature. Shocking, huh? So it's good enough for the civil nature when you're going to get $150 million, $200 million, but not good enough from a criminal aspect. So the Virgin Islands has been right in the middle of this from the very beginning. And if Epstein didn't have that protection down there, he would have been outed a very long time ago. So he had these enclaves. He had the U.S. Virgin Islands. He had Zorro Ranch in Mexico. He had his townhouse in New York. And when he was at these enclaves, well, he was the king. Everything he said, that was the way it went. He was in charge. And that didn't matter who was involved. If you were Bill Clinton, didn't matter. He had a picture of Bill Clinton in a dress painted on a wall. The guy sitting there in a blue dress and some bumps. Now, I don't know about you, I got some good friends, but none of my friends have a picture of me and some bumps sitting on the wall. I mean, what is he trying to show? What is he trying to tell you? I have power over him. If I could have a picture of him on the wall and some pumps and the dress that Monica Lewinsky was wearing, because that's the dress he was in painting, then what does that say about my power over him? And that was the thing with Epstein that people forget or miss. He collected people. He had a menagerie of people. That's what he wanted. He wanted powerful people under his control because that moves things way more than money ever could. If you have somebody who's very powerful under your control and they can open levers for you, they can get you access to royals, hell, that's the kind of person you want, right? Financial sector, politicians, these are all the people that he had. The gentleman was talking about Ehud Barak. Oh, I'd love to talk about that dirtbag. Total dirtbag, 100%, without a doubt, a dirtbag. Another guy, at Epstein's house. Another guy, credibly accused by Virginia Roberts of raping her. Nobody cares, nobody says a word. This man's still coming in and out of America as much as he wants. Didn't go through what you folks are going through at the border. I'm pretty sure that he never got busted, that, you know, when he's coming in. But here you folks are coming down to listen to a couple people speak. And it just shows the sort of power structure that we're really up against. For these people, even if you're hurting kids, it doesn't matter. Whereas the rest of us, well, you know, pay your taxes. Pay your taxes, make sure you're doing things the right way. And, you know, if not, the tax man will be there, or the cops will be there, or whatever. But for them, when you're making the laws, when your friends are paying for the laws, you can do whatever you want. And it's so frustrating to me to see it on a daily basis. Like, I can't even begin to explain to you folks how frustrating it is, because no matter how hard you push back against it, there's no one there to help out. Like, there's no one that picks up that baton in a position of power and says, you know what, this is the hill I'm ready to die on. And it should be, because there's more than just Epstein out there. It's not just him. You know, that's tip of the iceberg type stuff. And he might be gone, but how many other women are out there right now as we speak being trafficked? And it's not only just sexual. Do you know there's more people in servitude now than at any other time in history? Think about that for a minute. We have open-air slave markets in Libya, for God's sakes. And we're sitting here fighting about the dumb stuff that we fight about, when we should all be getting on board, and at the very least agreeing about that. We can't agree that slavery isn't something that's horrible. Modern-day slavery, for God's sakes. How about we go after the people that are perpetrating it? How about we go after human traffickers? How about we make the punishment for them so severe and harsh that nobody wants to do it ever again? Because I don't know about you, but for me, I don't find that to be a redeemable crime. I'm a second chance guy. If you do something in your life and you mess up, I think everybody should get second chances unless you're hurting them. Once you hurt people, I don't want to hear about, oh, well, I need a second chance. No, you don't. Those girls aren't getting a second chance. Their lives are ruined forever. And if you're trafficking people, selling human beings, or trading them for favors, then I believe that those punishments should be harsh. If there's a 10-year minimum for a drug sale, you telling me there shouldn't be a minimum for human trafficking? My opinion, there should be. The problem is we don't treat these people the way they should be treated. They should be treated harshly, much more harshly than we see. And the laws on the books for these people need to be enhanced. They need to be to a point where if you get arrested for this, there is no 13 months in jail. There is no wiggling your way off of them. Mandatory sentences. At one point in time when we were fighting the war on drugs, we had two different penalties for crack and cocaine. So if you got caught with crack, that's a mandatory sentence. But if you got caught with powder, well, that's okay. You know why, right? Who gets caught with powder cocaine? You know, bankers, businessmen. And who gets caught with crack? That's really what it comes down to. The thing is, though, what people don't understand is they look at all of us like that. It's not a black or white issue. It's a rich and poor issue. And we're all poor to that. None of us are in their stratosphere. None of us are anywhere near what these people are up to or what they're earning. So they look at all of us like that. And it's easy for them to shove us to the side. It's easy for them to do what they want with us and with our children especially. And when you don't have anyone in power who steps up to the plate to stop it, that's where you end up. You end up in a place like where we are right now, where you have a demand for justice, but nobody who's prepared to pursue it. And if you don't have anybody who's prepared to pursue justice in the federal government, then what are you supposed to do? You can yell and scream until your head blows up. It's not going to change a damn thing. Yeah. Yeah, you know, Whitney talked about it from a different angle. She talked about, you know, the mega group, Lex Lexner, stuff like that. And for me, I mean, I find that stuff interesting, but I'm more into the nuts and screws of it, the bolts of it, like really into the movement, how it moves, right? You know, that's the overall. But it's deeper than that. It's deeper than just the mega group. You know, there's a lot of bias when it comes to stuff like that. And for me, I look at it when we're talking about Lex Wexner, or we're talking about the people that were running around with those guys, it's all the financial sector. I mean, I know it sounds like a broken record, but I want to just make sure people understand that's the real evil here, the real bad guys, if you will, the financial sector in this story. Now, No, that was just, it was all stuff we knew. A lot of it was just unredacted. So what happened was, you know, all the black faces that were in the court documents where we weren't getting names before, they just filled in the names. We were able to kind of discern what the names were previously as we were going through it, but it kind of was just acted as a receipt. Yeah. The that document dump was It was beneficial for people who have followed the story for a while, but it didn't offer anything to someone who didn't know much about the story. They'd be like, I don't even know what this is. So.
Yeah. What really means something for us to get the most part of the story?
I mean, you got guys like Bill Clinton. He was unredacted. George Mitchell. You have Bill Richardson. Whole bunch of famous people. Heidi Klum. But their names are out parties and stuff like that. They weren't actual parts of the story. I try to stay away from the salaciousness because there's so much out there. You can definitely find that stuff. And look, hanging out with a guy in general makes you a dirtbag. There's no doubt about it. But I try to focus on the actual moving parts of the people that were really involved. Like the people who are credibly accused, those are the people that I really want to see brought to justice. Like anyone who Virginia said raped her, I want those people brought in at the very least for a discussion with the police. At the very least, but that has not happened. So that's where a lot of my frustration comes from. I would think that if anyone had that story to tell to the authorities, if it was your daughter who went to the authorities with that, how would you feel if they didn't believe her or if they didn't do anything about her? I'd end up in jail myself because I'd kill the person who did it to my daughter. If there was no justice, then what you're going to have is vigilantes going after people. So his bank account was in the Virgin Islands, and that stuff's all been concluded. They got their payouts from the settlement. So what happened was they set up the victim settlement fund, and girls could apply to that fund, and they could ask for, you know, however much they feel that their abuse was worth. And they ended up paying out like $140 million or something like that to over 100 girls. Now, the U.S. Virgin Islands ended up clocking $200 million. So the U.S. Virgin Islands, as an entity, as a government, brought in 200 million and survivors themselves, 125 million, 130 million. They made more money, like always. Oh, and then I forget about the tax man. He got his nut too. Let's not forget about that. Uncle Sam got 190 million. So everybody got pieced off, and the survivors, and some of these survivors who were abused, they had their claims denied. So now they have to go through the whole court system. They have to go, you know, start it all over again and get back to it. Whereas that fund was supposed to alleviate that. It didn't work out like that, friends. Are you talking about the bank that he had?
Yeah,
he had several different banks down there in the U.S. Virgin Islands. After he died. Yep. So what happened was the estate, Darren Indyke and Richard Kahn, they're the executors of his estate. They were in charge of all of that, and they had power of attorney even before he died. So they were facilitating all of those offshore trades. And there is no way to track that, as we all know. We have no idea who came in. Who knows where they're putting it? One thing I will say about Epstein, I don't have a good word to say about the man, but he knew how to hide money and he knew how to find it. That was his role. He was somebody who would find this money, people would come to him. And if somebody had, you know, pillaged money from them, he would find this money. And
those transactions are not public.
Unfortunately, they're not. Even in the statement, the estate statement, it's still redacted. So we don't know exactly how much. It looks like about $13 million was shifted that was unaccounted for. But it's so hard to get information because they redact everything. So when everything's redacted, even when I dive into the court documents, I can only do what I can do. You know, it's very difficult to go through those blocked out letters when you have page after page of it. So. I'm going to have everything, they have it all figured out, man, you know? So it's like, for me, it's been a 5-year ride now covering the story. And the story is taking, I've been to Zorro Ranch. I went down to New Mexico. I've been down there talking to people during my investigation while I was really in it. And I have seen some of the most disgusting and horrible things that, I mean, I never even knew people like this existed. I lived a pretty sheltered life when it comes to this kind of stuff. I mean, I knew that people were out there like this, but I had never been around. Like I said, I'm Italian, from a pretty deeply Italian enclave. So this kind of shit is unacceptable where I'm from. This is the kind of stuff that gets you, you know, right into the trunk where I'm from. So it was so frustrating to me that there was nobody there to step up and really, you know, help these girls out. So that's when Maria Farmer contacted me the first time. And I started hearing her story. So Maria Farmer and I were talking months before she went public, months before she talked to Whitney. So the reason she talked to Whitney was because Whitney had a huge following at that point. I had just started my podcast. So I hope that one day I'm about to release my archives. I mean, there's just so much going on right now with the survivors still trying to sue people, and it's not a point where we can start, you know, dumping that stuff, but I have some interviews from when this all first started that will knock your socks off. Knock your socks off, the thing that I was told. And I'm not talking about like somebody that you don't know. I'm talking about people that were right in the middle of all of you. All of you. And you want to hear some insane tales? Listen to what Juliette Ryan has to say about that South African trip with Bill Clinton and the massages. And it is insane. I mean, just for instance, Prince Andrew and Jeffrey Epstein were so close that Prince Andrew had his own traveling mattress on the plane. A traveling mattress? What does that mean? You have your own mattress on the plane? A girl goes to sit on one of the seats on the plane? Epstein says, oh no, you can't sit there. That's Bill Clinton's seat. What? What is this? These are some of the most powerful people in the whole entire world. And there's credible accusations that this man raped girls and nobody's asking any questions or slapping this thing in the mouth. I don't understand. So that's why we continue to pound away. But it's for me, the thing that motivates me is because I've become friends with Maria. I've become friends with Virginia. I talked to Julia. I know Teresa. So for me, it's like, what the hell, man? This stuff is bad. It's really horrible to see the effect that it's had on these girls. And we're not talking about just a couple of years. A lot of these women, it's just affected them for so long. And now I will say some of them are starting to get some help because they've come forward. They're starting to get more comfortable in their surroundings and in their skin, their new life, right? So it's good to see that. But there are countless women who have never even reported the abuse, who have never come forward about the abuse, and are still out there. And it's really sad to think about the life set. And honestly, a lot of them have committed suicide too. We've heard those things. So it's so difficult to try and understand how nobody in a position of power could care. If they didn't have the information, then I'd be like, you know what? Okay, I get it. They didn't know. So if you don't know, you don't know. But they had the information. They had everything stacked up for them. The FBI had this evidence. 20 years ago, they were going to arrest Jeffrey Epstein at a beauty pageant, and they were told not to. So these are all the things that, you know, like I said, we can go for 10 hours, and we still won't even get to the very beginning. I have over 9,000 episodes in my catalog. It's just such a story that is so long form that you really have to get in the weeds, and if you're not willing to really do the long form dive in, you're just going to get a surface level of this story. The only thing I will say about that, the dive-in, is get ready to have your barf bag, because it's gross. It's really disgusting to see the state of affairs, the state of the way the CIA conducted itself, the way that the FBI conducted itself, and the way that our elected officials conducted themselves. I mean, Stacey Plaskett, who was huge with the January 6th commission, she took over $45,000 from this man after he was already convicted. Then she says she's not giving the money back, but yet she's calling other Americans terrorists. So there has to be, at some point, there has to be accountability, right? There has to be a call for accountability. And that's really what we've been doing for like the last 4 years. And unlike a lot of other people, a lot of other groups of people, we've actually had some results. Glenn Maxwell going to prison is a big deal. Jean-Luc Brunel ended up going to prison in France. He killed himself in jail too. So the three lead people in Jeffrey Epstein's organization have been handled, but it's the other people, the people, the linchpins that would connect us to some of the politicians, that would connect us to the bankers that haven't been chased, that haven't been went after. And that's because they don't want to have that really blow up. They don't have to deal with it. How could they explain themselves? There's no explanation for that. So instead, just bury the story. Well, for you, it's simple. I know exactly where you're going with this. I know where you're trying to lead me. I understand, and I don't agree. I don't believe that there is spiritual powers that are dictating our day-to-day activity. I don't think that there is an evil devil or a god upstairs telling us what we're doing, and if there was, I wouldn't think that he'd have the time to worry about what's going on with me. He'd have other things to do. But what I will say is this, there are people in this world, there is no doubt. And whether it's produced by the devil or not, and I'm not saying you're wrong. I don't know. I'm not atheist. I'm an agnostic. I don't know. I won't say it one way or the other because I have no idea. I grew up Catholic, went to Catholic school, but it never struck a chord with me. I never believed in the gospel. I never had the faith. So I call myself a recovering Catholic. That's what I am. I'm somebody who was Catholic, but not anymore. But that's it. Doesn't mean that I don't respect what you guys feel and what you're saying, because I don't certainly do. I just happen to not believe in the almighty power dictating our day-to-day. I think that these men were driven by greed and a hunger for power. And when you're driven by greed and a hunger for power, any sort of atrocity is on the table. So you can frame it as the great power of good and evil, and that's fine. But my question is, where was God? Yeah, his childhood is pretty shrouded. He had a pretty basic childhood, nothing crazy in his childhood. There wasn't any reports of abuse. He went to college for a little while, seemed like a very normal guy leading up to that point. And there was no reports of him. Oh, his sexual history, there's no reports of what he was like. We don't know. Like, there's some people that will tell you that he was bisexual, that he had a relationship with Les Wexton. I don't know. I can't confirm that one way or the other. So I would not sit here and tell you that, oh yeah, that's for sure happened. But there are rumors that he is very promiscuous. And with the women, one thing that he did do, people don't realize this. He didn't have sexual relations with all of them, penetrational sex with all of them. It was other things, like he would be getting massage and pleasuring himself as he's getting these massages and all sorts of other just disturbing acts that this man was up to. But as far as his previous history, like as a child, there's really not much out there on any of that.
I appreciate the advice, and I'll definitely take a look at what you're talking about. But this is a lot deeper than something like that. Like, it seems to me that the situation is much greater than the spiritual good versus evil. There is a lot more going on. So we can't do anything about that. How can I fight against the evil spirit? I can't do that. What I can do is what I do. Inform people about this story so that they can do whatever they're doing. I'm not here to convince anybody of anything. That's something I always say. I'm here to inform. And if you want to walk through that door and learn more about the story, then it's certainly there for you to do. But as far as the other stuff, the spiritual stuff, it's not something that I would think of. I'm not into the occult. I'm not into any of that stuff. I don't know anything about circumcision or mutilation. I mean, I just don't. For me, that's not something that's ever popped up. Talking to the people who have been involved in the story, and that's where I've gotten my facts from. The people that are in the story themselves, the women, the people who were prosecuting the perpetrators, the people who were being chased. Those are the people that I'm talking to, and more of a human to human level.
And on March 24th, Thomas Sandifer, CEO of Brown & Williamson, had you fired. And the reason he gave you?
Poor communication skills.
And you wish you hadn't come forward? You wish you hadn't blown the whistle?
Yeah, there are times I wish I hadn't done it. There are times I feel compelled to do it. If you ask me, would I do it again? Do I think it's worth it? Yeah, I think it's worth it.
push yourself to